Scripture reading will be from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 9 through 11. What profit has the worker from that which he labors? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts. Except that no one can find out the work that God does from the beginning to end.
Good morning. For our visitors here, we're very glad that you're here. If you have any questions about what we're doing, why we're doing it, feel free to ask our elders, ask me, ask any one of our members, and we'll tell you what it is that we're doing and why it is that we're doing it. The easy answer for everything that we've done today is that we find what we do today in Scripture, and so we'll help you find those Scriptures as to why we do what we're doing today. And please also stick around. We can get to know you a little bit better. This morning, this is something that's been on my mind for a little while. But it's this concept that we find in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, that there is an appointed time for everything. If you'll go ahead and turn there to Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we're going to be here in these first 13 verses today. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, a lot of the people who have studied their Bibles rather thoroughly, Ecclesiastes seems to be a bit of a downer of a book. There's a lot of vanity that's found, a lot of things that say that all is vanity. Why does it matter what we do? But there is this sort of hidden behind-the-scenes message throughout the whole book. And really, there's this time that he gives us here in Ecclesiastes 3, and then he'll give it to us at the very end in chapter 12. But here we get this glimpse of why Ecclesiastes seems so grim, right? Nothing matters. Whatever you live for, it doesn't matter. If you're gaining wealth, if you're gaining fame, whatever you're striving for, all is vanity and striving after the wind. Life stinks. But the reason is really found right here in chapter 3 and ultimately in chapter 12 as well. We'll see that at the end of the book, is that everything that we are, everything that we wish to be, it all comes back to God. And if our lives are not lived for God, then it is all pointless. Life is grim, bleak. What is there reason for hope, for mercy or compassion or love when God is not there at the center of it? What reason is there for those things? And when we look at what God is trying to tell us here, that there is a time. There's a time for everything. And I was hoping that Kai would lead in his time. I didn't ask him to lead it, but I was hoping when I gave him the lesson that I hope he picks in his time. I don't always like to ask people to lead certain songs. But I wanted him to lead that song because that's really something that's here in this context, is all of these times, a time for this and a time for that, it's all God. It's God's time. All these things happen when God chooses them to happen. And at first, what we're given is we're given some positives. These are couplets here that we're seeing. There's this duality of life that we're discussing. We're going to focus just on the positives here. And before we really dive into the context here, it's very easy for us to look at the positives that we read here in the first 8 verses, because every good thing and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. It's very easy for us to think about the positives and to dwell on the blessings that God has given us. And again, as we've already discussed, the reason for this is Acts 17, at the end of verse 26 into verse 27. God has determined our times and the boundaries of our habitation that we should seek Him. Everything that we're going to read about here comes back to this, that we would seek God. This is why God allows these things to happen to us, is to bring us to a point that we are seeking after Him. Blessings means that we're seeking Him in order to be thankful. But, as we're going to talk about in a moment, there's an appointed time for everything, even the negatives. But we're going to focus on the positives first. In verse 2, a time to give birth. Perhaps your Bible reads a time to be born. This phrase here in Hebrew is most often translated as to give birth. It's more of an active verb rather than a passive verb of to be born. However, I think that the way that all of this is, the parallelism here, I think a time to be born is perhaps a better translation of the phrase. Because there are times in which you can translate it as to be born. But I think that that's a better idea here. A time to be born, a time to have life. There's also a time to plant, halfway through verse 2. There's a time to heal, a time to build up, a time to laugh, a time to dance, a time to gather stones, a time to embrace, a time to search, a time to keep, a time to sew together, a time to speak, probably our favorite, a time to love, and a time, notice that your Bible probably reads a time for peace, but to keep the parallelism of the word to, I said to make peace. These are positives, and these are very easy for us to look at, to desire, to understand that when all of these things have a time, it's a time for me to enjoy life. It's very difficult for us to then think of the negatives. It's very difficult for us to take a moment and decide that there is a time for everything. And as we go through, look at the negatives. Look at how they come up here with the positives. There's a time to be born and there's a time to die. And this was one of the reasons why this has been on my mind particularly recently. And notice that when there is a time for everything, sometimes that time comes sooner than we think. Sometimes that time is upon us before we've really even had time to blink. And it is in those moments that things really start to make more sense to us. Later on here in this book, he's going to talk about it is better to go to a house of mourning than a house of feasting. And again, that sounds rather bleak, but the reason that the preacher, who is Solomon, the reason that he's bringing this up is because he's talking about when it is a time for mourning, when it is a time for the negativity of life to happen, it's a time for us to reflect on things that are more important. The things that are important, they take effort. And sometimes when we're happy, we want to have less effort. So we don't always think about the things that are important. But when it's time to die, in whatever way that is, God has determined that for us. And a lot of times it doesn't seem fair. Sometimes we have long life. Sometimes we have a very short life. Jill and I just the other day were talking to a woman, and she had lost a child. The child was born without kidneys and died very quickly after they gave birth. Sometimes we die very quickly. And sometimes we get to live into our late 90s, or some of these people now living to their 120s. But whenever that time is, the Lord has chosen it. The Lord has allowed it to happen. And we don't always understand. But it reminds us of the duality of life. There's a time to be born as well as a time to die. The way that our creation is, you can't have one without the other. There's a time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted. Sometimes your Bibles might read a time to reap. Okay. But what I find interesting is uproot what is planted versus reap actually sort of have different connotations, but to the same ultimate end, which is being the opposite of planting. When I reap, it's about taking in what I have earned. Whereas an uprooting is perhaps more getting rid of that which is unnecessary. But both of them are opposites to planting. Planting is an investment. Planting is saying, I'm going to take the time to invest. Either invest my time or invest my energy. Invest water and soil. But sometimes it's time to uproot things. Perhaps you have a stump in your yard and it's getting in the way of things. Sometimes it's time to uproot a stump, but sometimes I'm simply reaping that which I have sown. I'm taking in that which I have earned. And a reaping could be a positive or a negative. I'm taking in the fruits of my labor to enjoy, to share with others, to sell to others, and thus make even more of a profit in what God has given me. Or perhaps in the negative, I did not take the time to take care of that which I planted. And thus now I am reaping nothing. Or I'm reaping a poisoned plant rather than a good and fruitful plant. And here he flips then. So at first he was giving the positive and then the negative. But in verse 3, he switches to the negative first, a time to kill and a time to heal. And whether or not that means killing perhaps a plant or an animal, which is, I think, more what we're looking for here. But there is a time in which death plays a necessary role. Right? For us, it's a time to die. But perhaps for the Jews at the time, there's a time to kill. There's a time to take life in which it is appropriate. God has not called us in our day and time to that there is a time to kill our fellow man, perhaps. But perhaps in the killing of other life, we are perhaps saving life. For instance, I was looking at a farmer who was addressing the concerns of a vegan, and I apologize, if you are a vegan, I'm not trying to make fun of you or anything, it was just his observations here. But he said, I find it interesting that there are those who are fighting for animals not to be eaten, but what they don't realize is their vegan way of life is more death than the burger they might otherwise eat. Because in order for my plants, he was a soy farmer, he said, in order for my soybeans to survive, do you know what I have to kill? Everything. I have to make sure that nothing can come and take my soy plants. Whether it's bugs, whether it's other animals coming in, whether moles that burrow under, deer that eat it from above, I have to kill all kinds of bugs, different insects that have to die. I have to kill other plants that might try to uproot my soybeans. But notice that those things are necessary in order to reap. Sometimes we have to have pesticides and herbicides in order to protect that which we have planted. Or perhaps when you are a shepherd, David spoke to King Saul before he went out and slew Goliath. He said that he has killed lion and bear in the protection of his father's sheep. Sometimes in order to maintain this life, there is death that must occur. And humans understand that better than the rest of creation, because everything has to die in order for us to have sustenance, whether it's animals or plants. Those things have to die in order for us to live. We have to take the energy of other things in order to survive. There is a time to kill as well as a time to heal. And notice that he starts with a time to tear down and then a time to build. There's a time to tear down. Sometimes the best thing to do is just start over. When Jill and I were in Honduras, there was a group of us that went on this trip, and part of the trip was to build houses for the less fortunate. And Jill was talking to me. We didn't go on every house build together. In fact, we only went on two house builds. I got very bad sun poisoning, and I had to stay with the medical team. But there was a build that Jill went on. It was on the side of a mountain. They had put tires into the side of the mountain so that there were stepping stones to get down to where this house was. And it was also raining, so even though those tires were there, it was still very slippery. Some people fell part of the way down the mountain. But the only thing for them to do with this house was literally push it off the side and let it fall down the mountain, because there was nothing to do with it. There was nothing to use to build up. All the wood was rotting. It was all falling apart. The nails were rusted or bent. There was nothing usable. So there was 50 of them all braced against the side of a mountain, pushing this house off and letting it fall to the bottom, because there was nothing else to be done for it, so that they could start over and build something better for people. Sometimes tearing down is by far the best option. For us as Christians, this should resonate very strongly with us. No matter what kind of person you are, and I'm sure you've thought of people that the way that you live now is so close to Christ. Have you ever felt like that? If all you would do was just make your life right with Christ, there's barely anything you'd have to change in your life. If you just dedicated yourself to Christ, that would make you a perfect individual. But even when you're like that, you have to sacrifice yourself entirely for the Lord. No matter who you are before the Lord, that has to be sacrificed. It's always better to tear the building down to build something new. There is a time to weep and a time to laugh, and I think both of these go together. A time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. And when we think about these, this is a time in which with our weeping comes the understanding of what is really important. We laugh just about every day of our lives. We have something to laugh at, take enjoyment with. But when it's time to really weep, when it's time to mourn, it's usually something very special. And it could be special in a bad way, but when it's time to weep, it's a moment in which we wished we were not in the middle of. It's usually an event that we wish were not upon us. And as we think about these times that come to us, it becomes clearer to us that these times are necessary for our lives. And we'll talk more about that later at the end, especially when we talk about the practical lessons that we can take with us this morning. There's a time to weep, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. And this one in particular is one that I get to, sort of this idea of weeping and mourning. I think in the New Testament, Paul says that we should weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. That there is a time for both of those, and we should take them equally and help those who are in both situations. Because sometimes when we want to mourn, it's very difficult to join in rejoicing. And the opposite is also true. When I'm rejoicing, I don't necessarily want to mourn. But these things are both necessary for life, to mourn and to rejoice. A time to throw stones and a time to gather stones. And this one I find particularly interesting for the Israelites that the preacher is writing to. Because throwing stones might have a completely different connotation to them than to us. Because we don't stone people. But there is a time in which the casting of stones is appropriate. And we won't talk about stoning, but I do want to go back to our example of David for a moment. There's a time in which the slinging of stones is the best option for the moment. It's a way in which we can accomplish the will of God. And sometimes that takes action that others might deem excessive. It might take action that people might seem unnecessary. But in that throwing of a stone, you are taking part in what it is that God would have you do. That you are taking a moment to go beyond. You're taking a moment to take things into account of what God would have, and then you cast the stone. Kai and Vicky were very kind to us. A couple of weeks ago, they gave us Nerf guns, some extra ones that they had. And Bo has been having a lot of fun with them. But you know what you always have to do at the end? You have to pick them all up. And in that way, the throwing the stones versus the gathering stones, one is more positive than the other. But in both of these, there is a necessity. And sometimes it takes one to do the other. I must gather before I throw. David went down to the brook and took 5 smooth stones before he could cast just one. Both of them have their times in which God would call us to. And with these next 7, we start with, in the middle of verse 5, a time to embrace and a time to shun embracing. This one is perhaps one of the hardest in the list, especially when we think about it in terms of church discipline. This is one that we have a lot of difficulty with because it's the last thing that we want to do to put someone out of our midst. But there comes a moment in which the ones who have chosen to be God's children and the ones who have chosen not to can no longer share the same space. And it is a time to shun embracing. And for us, when we shun embracing, usually it's to encourage them to come back to us, to come back to the embracing. But even if that's not the way that we necessarily think about this, this is another way that I thought about this. There's a time in order to hug, and then there's a time in which you have to let go of that hug. There's a time in which I have to let go and go on and do what it is that I have to do. Think about dropping someone off at the airport. There's a time in which we'll hug them while they're at the curb, but they have to make a flight. At some point, we have to let go. At some point, we have to continue on with our lives. And perhaps that's another way of taking to shun embracing. I found this interesting as well. A time to search and a time to give up is lost. Notice it's not a time to search and a time to lose, but a time to give up is lost. Sometimes there comes a moment in which I will no longer search. And for me, this is actually one thing that I have to do quite a bit. Because for some odd reason, when I stop looking, that's when I find the thing I'm looking for. I look and look and look and say, you know what, never mind, I have to move on with my day. And then I come back only to find it within 30 seconds, right? Always happens. Sometimes giving up as lost is the thing that needs to happen. Because either it deserves to stay lost, or perhaps it gives you the clarity to find it later. I think this one is perhaps the hardest one on the list for God. Can you imagine having children, having billions of children, for the majority of them to say that they want nothing to do with you? And God works and works and works and works, sends one of his own sons to help the rest of the children, knows that he's marching his son to death, and after all of that effort, after all of the realization of God's plan, that there still comes a moment in which God says, I have to give up as lost. Perhaps the hardest one for us. When we think of searching and giving up as lost, we might think of keys. But God has to think of souls. There's a time to throw away. Lauren can attest, our mother has no idea what that means. Sometimes you just keep and keep and keep. Now, their house is by no means messy. She's not a hoarder. But you go in their storage room and there's quite a few crates and boxes in there. Things that I'm not even sure my mom knows what's in them. Sometimes it is a time of clarification, a time of resolution. Many of the crates that are there were perhaps designed with us children taking them with us when we left, and we did not often do that. Perhaps we were living in a very small apartment and didn't have room for all those crates and boxes. But there comes a time in which to throw away is the best bet. Instead of keeping it and trying to consume it. Have you ever opened your fridge and said, oh, there is something here I should have thrown out a long time ago? Sometimes to keep it, all it does is it ruins everything else. We say one bad apple ruins the whole bushel, right? That's the way it is sometimes. To throw away is perhaps the better bet. For us, perhaps the time to throw away is most easily realized when it's time to throw away the life that we've been living without God. And that's perhaps the easiest interpretation of this passage. Throw away that which is against God and his will for your life. About a time to sew together, but a time to tear apart. Perhaps the best thing to do with a ripped garment is to rip it further and use it for scraps. To use it to make something else. One of the things that my wife really likes to do is make t-shirt quilts. And she'll say, well, I don't wear this t-shirt anymore, but I can still use it. Perhaps it's time to tear the shirt apart so that I can make it into something better. And when we come to this, I think about the church. I think about this from the standpoint of our Christendom, is that the kingdom is very much this way. We've torn apart that which is no longer useful for us, but God has put us together into something far greater. When you think about cutting gemstones, for instance, if you go to a jeweler, do you know how much was shaved off for you to have that beautiful gemstone in your jewelry? There's much that was removed in order for you to have the most brilliant of gemstones. But now you look at it. You ever seen uncut diamonds? They don't often look all that great. But as soon as you start cutting them and start putting all of these facets on them, how brilliantly the light is prismed, It's better the end product that you had, to tear away the parts that were taking it away from brilliance and from beauty. Again, as I said earlier, perhaps time to speak is perhaps our favorite on the list. We always want it to be the time for us to speak. I more so than perhaps anyone in the room. But there is a time to be silent. Silence has a great power over people. And one that I always remember when I think about this, a time to be silent and a time to speak, is I'll think about my father. Really both my parents, but my dad's was perhaps a little bit stronger. There were times in which I would get in trouble, and instead of speaking sternly with me, or perhaps going and grabbing the spatula, I would be sitting on my bed, and Dad would come in and sit down and say nothing. He wouldn't look at me. He wouldn't do anything. He would just sit. And those were the worst punishments. Just say something. You know, we'll often say, you'd rather get a spanking than say, I'm disappointed with you. This is even worse than that. Just at least tell me you're disappointed. Instead of saying nothing. And then he would finally speak. Sometimes that silence has so much power behind it, and no one really exhibits that more than God. Because God has spoken everything he needs to speak. He has spoken us into existence, that's already enough. But then God spoke his word to us, the very word that we're studying right now. And God spoke that, and after the first century, we have no concept of him speaking ever again since then. For the last 1900 plus years, we have no proven revelation of God after the fact. That God has given us all things that pertain to life and godliness. And that silence resounds with people, both positively and negatively. That silence speaks volumes to people. And God has chosen it that way. He has chosen to be silent, but mostly because he has said all that he needs to say. There's one more thing he has left to say. Either, I never knew you, or welcome my good and faithful servant. There's a time to love and a time to hate. This one is one that we might push back on a little bit, especially the way that we often think about these things. Hating people is not part of our business of being a Christian. Perhaps pitying people, asking for compassion and mercy, but that does not mean that there is not a time to hate. And the point that I often will think about here with the time of hating is time to hate that which is against the law of God. Hate that which God has called sin. And that doesn't mean hating a person, but hating the actions that they have taken. The things which they have done that is not in accordance with the will of God. And notice that when you look at the lists of things, whether it's 1 Corinthians chapter 6 or perhaps Galatians chapter 5, when you look at these lists of qualities that God says, these are the people who will not inherit the kingdom of heaven, notice it's not people, it's what the people are doing, right? And sometimes it'll say a slanderer, but really it's the idea that it's the slander. It's not the murderer, it's the murder. It's these things that we do are what God hates. And the answer for the things that God loves are also verbs. They're love and perhaps being patient. These are things for us to do. So to do that which is against the law and the will of God are the things that we should hate. We were talking in Bible class of there being a time in which we do battle. And I do think that there are wars, physical wars, in which it was necessary for people to take up arms. That in order to not take up arms, that was the way in which God determined that justice would be done. Either for the people who were maligned or against those who maligned them. One that I think often is perhaps World War II. Perhaps it was a time in which it was a necessity for us to take up arms. But the most important time in which we must make war is to make war against the devil. That word that we say in English, Satan, it's Satan or Shatan in Hebrew, is the accuser or the enemy. And it is he who has determined that it is a time for war. Without Satan, we never would be at war, physical or spiritual. And it is he who we must take arms and fight against. It is he who we must defend ourselves and those we most love against. It is he who wants nothing more than to see the defeat of our God. And he has yet to achieve it. He has yet to achieve victory over God, and he never will. But he still makes war. He still fights. And it is this fight to which Paul said in Ephesians 6, take up the whole armor of God that you may withstand the devil. And then after these eight verses, Solomon gives a summation. The preacher gives a summation. From verses 9 through 13, he says, what profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? I have seen the task which God has given the sons of men with which to occupy themselves. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their heart, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. I know there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is a gift from God. I want to break this down a little bit. After everything, there is a time, right? This is what he's just taken the first eight verses to say. There is an appointed time for everything, for anything under heaven. And so what profit is there for us to work? Well, because if you'll notice, one of the things he didn't say is there is a time for work and there is a time for rest. What profit is there for the worker? Well, to rest in our labor and in the fruits of our labor. I have seen the task which God has given. God has determined that we should not laze about, that we should not be loafers, that it is a time for us to be industrious. It's a time for us to be ants, as Solomon points out in the book of Proverbs. Go to the ant, you sluggard. It is not the time for us to be a sloth. Because when we work, we see that everything is the way that God has designed it. He has given us this time to occupy ourselves until his times are realized. And he has made everything appropriate in its time. And sometimes it does not feel like this. Now does not feel like the appropriate time for God to do such a thing. Or sometimes when we take it upon ourselves to decide it's an appropriate time to do something, and it is by no means appropriate, the action or the time. But with God, he has made everything appropriate in its time. It is not appropriate when we take it upon ourselves. But God still allows things to happen, for good or for ill. And then in this next sentence, I'm going to split it up here. On the one hand, he has set eternity into our hearts. This seems to be something that, granted, we can't really communicate with them, but it seems that it's only us in the animal kingdom that seems to understand the concept of eternity. But even then, have you ever laid awake at night thinking about eternity and it's a bit of a fearful thing? Have you ever thought about that? It's very daunting. It can be very fear-invoking. But because of this idea of eternity, that sometimes we will forget about time. Time directs us at every moment of our day. But sometimes we'll stop and forget about time. Things that have been 30 years in the making on one sense might seem like ages. But then when someone, I'm 30, someone dies in their 30s, that's never enough time. So which is it? It's in whatever God has deemed it appropriate. He has set eternity in their heart, yet, notice it's the first word after the comma, yet, so that man will not find out the work which God has done. We will never know all of that in which God has done for us, even though we have the concept of eternity. God has given us the ability to think in eternal terms, but we'll never quite understand what it is that God understands about eternity. In fact, Jill and I were just talking about this on our drive yesterday. Is she said, God has been here eternally. What was he doing for eternity before he made us? I said, that's a great question. And I have no idea. Because God understands that better than we do. God knows what it was. But even though we have eternity in our heart, we'll never understand the lengths that God has gone to from the beginning to the end of time. It's not for us to know. I also want you to notice here, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done. God is the one here working. There is nothing better than to rejoice and do good. Now, obviously, as we've been speaking already, this is to do God's will, which living our lives, if all of us lived according to God's will, then it would be a time of unending rejoicing. But because of the life that we live, to rejoice and to do good is something to be striven for, not something that just happens. It's something that we must work for at every moment of our lives. And then here he says, every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. Even the bare necessities of what we get out of our working, out of our toiling, making it from day to day in this life, those alone are blessings and gifts from God, let alone all the other great and wonderful things that God does for us on a daily basis. We here are the richest 5% in the world here in America. God has blessed us indeed. It's a gift from God. And sometimes we don't like to think of the negatives here as gifts. If you'll permit me a moment, as I've been thinking about this in response to Sean Cavender, if you're not familiar with the situation, not this last Thursday, but the Thursday before that, there was a preacher named Sean Cavender who was killed in a car accident. And that very morning, he had given a lecture about God. One of the last things he did on this earth is preaching. And when I think about his death, he died very young. I think he was 35-ish. His family is very young. He has a young wife. He has a 7 and a 4-year-old. And on our side of things, this is a tragedy, obviously. This is something terrible that his wife and children are going through and the rest of his family is going through. But it is a gift. He gets to go and be with the Lord. That seems like a wonderful gift. As much as it may not seem like it's time for us, that sometimes that's the way we need to remind ourselves. That sometimes there are things that may not seem so great, but are really gifts in the end. Three things I want to leave you with here this morning. The lesson will be yours. The first is pain and pleasure both have their time. Times of pain make the times of pleasure better, and then vice versa. Pleasure lessens the pain. But they are both necessary. So often when we, especially those who are not believers in God, this is inevitably the conversation that you get to. How could God let XYZ happen? And what I always find interesting is, well, if you stop that, then what else does God need to stop? Whatever pain is it, where is God going to draw the line? This is the line in which God has drawn. But sometimes for you to feel pleasure, that means others are feeling pain. Perhaps you were given the promotion over someone else. Is God supposed to prevent that so that no one feels pain? At what moment do we stop and say, this isn't worth it or this isn't right? That's not the way that God works. God allows pain in order to be both a teacher. Pain is a great teacher. Perhaps the best teacher. We don't like to think about that. But pain is perhaps the best teacher. But it also helps us remember that this is not where we belong. We belong in the presence of God. That's where God has always wanted us to be. But there's a problem for us. Paradise wouldn't be paradise. It would just be every day. In order for us to better understand and appreciate heaven, we need to live here first. We need to experience the pain and the negative, as well as the pleasure. Because again, if life were only pain, then pleasure might scare us. Perhaps pain wouldn't be the teacher that it is, because it's all pain. But if all were pleasure, then pleasure becomes blasé. Pleasure becomes just another moment for us. And this is why we need both, in order to really appreciate what it is coming for us. There is a time for everything. This is the time that you have been given. And so far you have spent it wisely by being here and worshiping God with us. But sometimes what we forget is there is a cost that must be counted. Jesus gave the parable of the man who began to build a new barn, but he did not count the cost and so left it unfinished because it was too expensive. And there he's giving a parable of the cost of discipleship. Have you counted the cost of being one of God's disciples? Whether or not you count the cost, there is a time for everything. But those times, especially the times of negativity, are much more easily experienced when you are a disciple of Christ, when you have counted the cost. And I promise you, the cost that it costs you versus the return on investment is no comparison. The giving up of yourself over to God, there is no comparison the reward to which you will reap compared to that which you are holding on to. It is being offered the power, the prestige, and the wealth of being president of our country, but I would rather stay homeless. And I would rather fight for the scraps out of the garbage than be given such a place of prominence, power, and wealth. And that's the example, the illustration that I'm giving you, but it's so many magnitudes higher than that. The difference of God offer what he's offering you in salvation versus what you're trying to hold on to, the measly scraps of your ungodly life. It is nothing to compare to. We had a flood in our house in Texas, and there was some piping in the ceiling, and that's where the flooding came from. It was a very harsh winter. Pipe burst, and before we could find, it took Jill's father and I half an hour to find the water shut off because it was outside buried under snow. And we had a friend come and said, "Hey, I'm a handyman. I do this all the time. I would love to help you out. I'm just going to ask that you pay materials. I won't charge you labor or anything if you'll just pay me materials." That was nothing compared to the work that he did. He should have charged me far more for his time and expertise. And I was so grateful for the work that he had done and the value that it gave our house came time to sell. It was very helpful of him. Sometimes that's all God is asking for. He asks for our life, this life here, which is at best 100 years. That's what he asks for. "If you'll serve me for just that time, and I'll give you the rest of eternity to live in bliss and peace and rest." That seems like a mighty easy thing to do, isn't it? I'll give you 100 years of my life and you'll give me an eternity? That seems fair. In fact, it seems far more than fair. It's very unfair for the amount of work that God has put in to our salvation. And there is a time for everything. There is a time to realize that now is the time to dedicate yourself to God. Perhaps God will give you more time. I don't know. But now is the time. Or perhaps you counted the cost and you began the job, but you've been rethinking that bottom number on the bill. Now is not the time to look back. If you have already dedicated yourself to the Lord, now is not the time to turn around. Now is the time to finish what you started. Now is the time to move on day after day, remembering today is the time in which I am going to live for God. The next minute, that is the time that God has given me to live for Him. The next hour is the time that God has given me to live for Him. And if you haven't been thinking like that, now is the time. Now is the time to rededicate yourself to thinking about every moment being the time to serve God in all things. So this morning, if you either need to come to God or if you need to come back to God, both are available to you now as we stand and as we sing.
Amen.